Okay, our first presentation this morning as the slides are loading is Martha Sullins. Martha is an Ag Business Management Specialist with Colorado State University Extension, where her areas of emphasis in applied research and outreach include smaller scale and specialty livestock and crop production businesses, agritourism, local foods, farm transition, on-farm food safety and risk management. Her presentation for today is local foods in the West. And with that, Martha, you're up to bat.
Great. Thank you very much, George. Well, I would like to start today by just providing an overview of local foods in the West and talk about what those food systems are, some of the drivers in the market for local foods, and then what we see in terms of growth and evolving opportunity for producers. And the most important thing to note is that as we look across federal, academic, and other sources of information, there just is no one definition of what local or local foods is. And some definitions come up as being very specific to a geographic distance of 50 or 100 miles. Others refer to a larger area. But in the final analysis, although this is a really important concept, there is just no specific definition. And that's important because in a lot of markets, there is a very observable premium for local foods, but there's really no way to certify what is local unless that particular marketplace has a program where they do define local very specifically. So local food systems, though, are considered place-specific clusters of agricultural producers and the consumers who are engaged in production, processing, distribution, and sales of those foods. And I draw that definition from the Economic Research Service in a publication that they released last year. Another important consideration is what is driving demand in local food markets. And so as you can see from the graphic on this slide, if you look at the legends there, you can see there are a lot of attributes listed. And this is from a 2008 study from Onozaka Nurse and Filmini McFadden. And you can see that some of those attributes listed are that purchasing local foods in direct markets provides health benefits, supports the local economy, helps farmers receive a fair share of returns. But what you don't listed are more commonly noted attributes such as price, convenience, packaging that we might see in more conventional markets. So note that these are all very much values-based attributes, and what they really tell us is that consumers believe that by making these purchases, they're supporting a cause, they're driving something in the marketplace. Another study from 2015 just substantiates that. 93% of consumers associate local with fresh. So again, there was no mention of local meaning those more specific attributes. So let's look then at what we know about size and growth in direct markets. And there really is a dearth of data. So you'll notice as I go through this that there we've got some national data, and then we're going to have to look at regional information and kind of pull together some different sources to see what the trends are. At the national level, I'll go back to that Economic Research Survey study that I mentioned just a minute ago. They did a very nice job of in putting together what they call synthetic estimates of the total value of local food based on U.S. Census of Agriculture data as well as Ag Resource Management Survey data, which is also known as ARMS, found that the total value could be estimated at $6.1 billion in 2012. So, of course, that's increased since then. That value comes out as being certainly higher than the Census of Agriculture estimates and much lower than what we see in the grocery or industry literature or reports that have been released. So now we'll look at what we can pull from other data sources about regional direct market growth and dynamics, again, because we just don't have the level of data needed to be able to make specific projections. So if we look at this heat map, it shows us the location of farmers markets, which are a primary direct market channel. And this shows you across the United States, you can see those bright red spots are where there's a greater concentration of farmers markets. You can see they occur primarily in greater density in the eastern third of the U.S. as well as along the coastal western states. The location of these markets is really important because they serve as a point of contact or a point of entry for a lot of local food producers. It's where they really learn how to gauge and build up a local food-based business. Farmers markets also serve as food incubators, as business incubators, especially for new and beginning farmers. So the fact that we have areas where there are fewer of those direct market opportunities should be noted. What's also interesting is that the growth in farmers markets, while it accelerated a lot through the mid-2000s, we're now seeing that that growth appears to be tapering off a bit. And this has been noted in other studies for sure, although there's still a large number of farmers markets, both in the U.S. as well as in the western states. We're seeing that the growth in those markets is not as steep as it was before. In fact, it's really leveled off. So I think we're seeing a bit of a saturation in that direct market opportunity. What we are seeing is that the number of subscription agriculture service farms, so CSA farms, which are another really important type of direct market activity for local food producers, that it grew very quickly, according to U.S. Census of Agriculture data, in the West, so by 11%, while that growth was much smaller across the United States. So this does provide that direct market connection for local food producers, but it has at what we recognize to be lower costs in a lot of areas. And so I think what we're starting to see is some migration from farmers markets, which tend to, where producers tend to incur much higher transportation and labor costs, to on-farm-based direct market sales, which will have lower costs in those areas. So what we suspect, then, is that the local food market is shifting more into intermediated markets. And so these are not direct-to-consumer markets, but rather they are markets where there is an intermediary who's facilitating that sale. And so I have listed a couple of those. Food hubs and food aggregators are emerging as a really important intermediated market, and food hubs are collaborative enterprises that help move local foods into larger markets, and by aggregating and distributing products across both small and mid-sized producers and across multiple growers. So that allows those growers to access larger markets than they could otherwise individually. Farm to school and other institutions also, as well as sales to other retail buyers. So those are what we see as the emerging intermediate market. So this map shows that Western region farms, and there are two data points hopefully you can see on here. And one, you can see the colored squares show by county areas that have different levels of farms that have reported through the Census of Agriculture that they sell in intermediated markets. And so from the yellow, where there's very little activity, to the dark blue, where there's more activity, you can see that a lot of that, again, is located in the coastal states. The red dots are the food hubs, which are the food aggregation points. So overall, ERS estimated in 2012, because they were able to do this at a national level, but not at a state level, they were able to estimate that $3.3 billion of the $6.1 billion that I mentioned before, so a little more than half, is attributable to intermediated marketing channels only. So it's actually a really important market. What is difficult about this is we just don't have enough data to understand the dynamics that we do in direct-to-consumer markets. So this is based on U.S. Census of Agriculture data, and this is just the number of farms that report either direct to consumer or direct to retail, which is also intermediated markets. And you can see that there's a greater proportion of Western farms using direct to consumer markets than in have from the U.S. Census of Agriculture data. We have nothing on value of sales going through intermediated markets. This is about to change, which is really exciting, and I will mention that in the conclusion to this part of the presentation. So we can look then at the location of food hubs. Here's another map that shows that indeed we do have food hubs dispersed throughout the West. But again, you can see that there are areas where there are none of these aggregation centers. And these really do represent an important opportunity for producers, especially those that are geographically challenged, as many of our food producers are. They're removed from direct markets. It allows them to sell to a localized aggregator. They can still capture more of that local food premium, but they don't incur the cost of marketing. Those are borne by the aggregator. Food hubs preserve the identity of the product generally as it moves through the food supply chain from production all the way through to distribution to the end buyer. So a very important intermediated market, and it's growing very quickly in the West, according to the latest U.S. Farm to School Census data, is farm to school. And these are purchases by schools or school districts directly from food producers. And these are purchases of fruits, vegetables, meats, and dairy. And you can see that the value, and this is in real terms, was $110 million in 2011-2012 when they conducted the first census. It grew to $245 million, so it doubled, more than doubled, in 2015. And you can see this is the percentage by state represented on this chart. So this gives you a sense of the untapped potential as we try to get a handle on local food markets. And I just put this slide in here to give you a sense of, in kind of a broad sense of, if we look at this map, which this chart, which shows food away food at home expenditures as being about $2,200 per person in the United States in 2012, compared to what farmers reported selling to consumers. Those are the blue bars. You can see that there is definitely a lot of room for growth in this area. So again, let's look at the supply side a little bit using the data that we have available. And we know across the West, as well as throughout the United States, overall, direct-to-consumer food sales, and again, where we have that value of sales that we can measure from one census year to the next, that is a very small percentage still of all the market value of agricultural products in the United States. There are a few exceptions in Western states where we see that that has grown dramatically as a portion, as a proportion, but overall it's less than 1%, and that has changed very little overall. And so if we look at the supply side again, we can see that really the evidence points to the growth in local foods is not necessarily in those direct-to-consumer markets, because it does appear to be tapering off. I listed on the right there some of the top markets where we see the greatest value in terms of total value of direct-to-consumer sales. But overall, we can see that that growth appears to be waning a little bit. However, on the other hand, what we see is that the number of direct market farms is growing in the United States and throughout the West. And what's interesting about this is that while there are more farms, those farms are not producing in a larger sales category. And so what is also consistent with what ERS found is that those farms are selling, ERS found, for example, that farms with less than $75,000 in gross cash income made up 85% of all local food farms. And what we see looking at the census data is that the growth in those direct-to-consumer or local food farms has really been in those lower sales categories. So there's a lot of growth, but it's not impactful in terms of total local food sales. So what I think is important to look at now is what is really behind the growth of the local food economy in the West. And there are a couple of really important issues here. And one is there are a lot of innovative projects and partnerships that have emerged. There's some really new and exciting market information that helps to decrease transaction costs and increase efficiency in these markets. And there have been some really significant public policy changes and investments made that are facilitating growth in these markets. And as we gather more data and information, those investments and that market information is being channeled into the areas where we see this great need. Here is an example of what we're seeing a new growth in, and that is regional food cooperatives. We're really seeing a resurgence in cooperatives across the West and across the U.S. And this is just an example of a cooperative south of Portland that's a multi-stakeholder organization that encompasses producers, consumers, and workers as part and members of this cooperative. And so they all hold pieces of this value chain from production through to distribution and purchase by the end buyer. We're also seeing a lot of innovative production facilities that are helping to increase both the availability of local foods as well as the types of foods that are that can be purchased. The top two slides show a vertical production facility, an indoor production facility in Jackson, Wyoming, that's a greenhouse on the side of a parking garage. The lower two slides are a hydroponics operation in western Colorado. And that is one area, an aquaponics rather, where we are seeing a lot of growth because they use 90% less land and water than conventional production systems. And so we're seeing a lot of emerging aquaponics operations in the West. In terms of the financial backing and investment in local food businesses, we're seeing a lot of community-based investing. And this is just an example of La Montanita. Has a micro-lending program where they lend to farms and ranches and value-added producers who sell products within what they consider their food shed. And so they make small loan funds available. We also see retailers doing this. Whole Foods has a local producer loan program. And we also see loan programs emerging where smaller investors are bundling capital together to invest in food businesses that otherwise wouldn't be able to obtain capital through conventional means. A lot of new market information and tools, thanks primarily to the USDA Ag Marketing Service. You can see there's price information on farmers markets and auctions, farm-to-school programs, Food Hub, price and other information is coming. And so they're doing a really good job of putting together information that can help buyers understand dynamics in the marketplace. They also just facilitated the development of a local food systems toolkit, which helps communities conduct economic impact analyses and understand linkages in their community food systems so they can be more involved participants and drivers. And lastly, in terms of investment, USDA has invested about $1 billion in the last 6 years in local and regional food businesses, and the 2014 Farm Bill alone authorized $429 million for different local food projects. And so these next couple of slides show you what that federal investment looks like across the West, and this shows you the number of projects that were funded per state, and this comes from USDA information for that time period, 2009 to 2015. And then this shows you what that investment looks like in terms of the total value of the $185 million that's been invested in Western states for those past 6 years. So, and that represents about 32% of the total investment that the USDA made in across the United States. That was in the West. So then lastly, just a few resources to point you to, and I will just mention one in particular, which is really exciting, and that's right there in the middle. The National Ag Statistics Service is in the process of conducting its first local food marketing practices survey. The survey just went out to data were due yesterday, so hopefully a lot of producers have turned in their surveys. The survey results will be available in December, and that information is going to shed a lot of light on particularly those intermediated sales, which are harder for us to grasp right now. But that is a tool that's going to be extremely helpful in terms of identifying where and the value of local food sales and the costs associated with those sales. So with that, I will turn the microphone over. Thank you very much.
Martha, thank you very much. That was a great introduction to this. These are statistics that I personally have been looking for some time, and we're really anxious to see what additional information is available with the city survey results. We have several questions here for you, but I think we should move to the next speaker now, and then we will have a panel at the end of the hour here. See how much time we have, and then we will pose these questions, two of these questions to you at that point. So